The next case is 03-2155, State of Ohio versus Ralph Danielson. Mr. Hardwick.
May it please the court, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. This case is very simple. In order to pay restitution, can and actually must be immediately appealed for two reasons. First of all, under 295308, the imposition of restitution without consideration of the ability to pay is contrary to law. And secondly, under the traditional definition of final judgment, an order to pay restitution is an order that ends the litigation on the merits and leaves nothing but the court to do but execute the judgment. Now, the state is right that all that's left is to execute the judgment in this case. And that's precisely why this is a final appealable order. In no other circumstance would this, can I even think of a situation which this court would hold that there must be some sort of contempt hearing or motion to enforce an order before it becomes appealable. I do want to apologize for one confusion in my brief. I did cite to 250502, which is the definition of final order. But I also cited 250503, which says that all final judgments are appealable. And there's a difference between a final order and a final judgment. A final order can be a provisional remedy, for instance, to disclose allegedly privileged information, which can be immediately appealed. The final judgment is not expressly defined in the Ohio Revised Code, which is why I cited to the United States Supreme Court and to Black's Law Dictionary to give the definition. And I think the state actually proves Mr. Danielson's point when they say what's left is to execute the judgment. Under 295308, the decision is contrary to law. Now, this holding, what we're asking this court actually makes a lot of sense from a practical point of view, because when this court looks at the state's suggested rule and the Court of Appeals suggested rule in detail, it doesn't work. When is a hearing to impose, what exactly is a hearing to enforce a judgment? I don't even know what that is. That doesn't exist most places. Most places, you get an order to pay restitution, they start taking it out of a prison inmate's account, or if the person's on community control, the probation officer immediately starts hounding the person for collection. And I don't mean to demean the probation officer, that's their job, but that's what happens immediately. Just the fact that an inmate pays defendant pays $5 a month constitute enforcement of the judgment? There's nothing in the state's brief or the Court of Appeals decision that says that. On a practical matter, as I've said in my brief, under Appellate Rule 4, a notice of appeal that's filed prematurely is considered held in abeyance until the proper time for filing comes. Well, if a restitution order is not appealable until some undefined event happens, the notice of appeal is held in abeyance until some undefined event happens. No one knows what their job is next. When is it the court reporter's job to transmit the record? When is it the time to start filing the brief? It's just unclear.
Why should a thief benefit because he's indigent at the time of the proceeding in the common pleas court? If he later, over a period of 2 or 3 years or 4 of probation, becomes financially suitable to make restitution to the merchant who has suffered a loss.
Your Honor, the Ohio General Assembly has addressed that possibility because the judge is only required to consider the ability.
I can't hear you.
I'm sorry. The Ohio General Assembly has addressed that possibility because the trial judge is allowed to consider present and future ability to pay. So the trial court is allowed to consider that. The question in this case is just when are you allowed to appeal whether the trial court's decision was appropriate or not.
So it's entirely conceivable from your vantage point that if the trial court considered the future ability of this individual to pay over the course of 2 or 3 or 4 years, that a judgment for $22,000 restitution could be upheld.
Yes, it could. And the question just is, how do you get to the Court of Appeals to argue that point? And that's all we're, and I believe it was my second proposition of law, which this court chose not to address, which is to actually address the merits of, is there an ability to pay in this case? Did the trial court properly consider ability to pay in this case?
But that's not a present ability to pay. It's
correct.
A present and future ability to pay.
Correct. And Your Honor, I also want to point out, in this case, the Court of Appeals, based on the record in this case, in a decision that the state chose not to appeal, found that the trial court did not properly consider Mr. Dannison's ability to pay a $1,000 fine. Now, if they didn't properly consider his ability to pay $1,000, the $22,000 judgment is 22 times worse than that. And again, the state chose not to appeal that decision, so the state that's now law of the case, that the trial court did not properly consider ability to pay. And when it came to restitution, the Court of Appeals just said that they're not going to consider at this point because no one's made an attempt to enforce the judgment. And that's the only issue that's before this court. This court does not have to say Mr. Dannison gets to avoid paying restitution forever. In fact, after reading the state's response, I do want to correct the remedy I suggested in this case. And the remedy I suggested in this case was to vacate the restitution and send it back to the trial court. Actually, the proper remedy is to send this case back to the Court of Appeals to reverse their decision and to ask them to actually address the merits of Mr. Dannison's ability to pay claim and to allow him to brief the issue further.
Well, counsel, is there a compilation of a record to allow for the Court of Appeals to review the merits here?
Well, firstly, yes, there is, because there was a sufficient record for them to decide the consideration of ability to pay a fine. So, second of all, there was a PSI done in this case. I did not move to supplement it to the record of this court because this court declined to hear the merits issue, so there was no reason to bring the PSI to this court. But there was a PSI done, and the Court of Appeals noted it discussed whether that he worked in his family business.
Right.
The Court of Appeals said that's not enough given other factors, and that does make sense. Working in a family business doesn't mean you're making money. Working in a family business may mean you show up for 12 hours a day and get no pay because that's what every member of this family does. And again, that's all part of the PSI, which is something that's properly that the Court of Appeals should decide. If this court had accepted the second proposition of law on the merits, then that would be before this court. But this court chose, and I can understand why, only to address the narrow procedural issue of when can you appeal a restitution order. That's the rest of the issues are substantive issues that remain for the Court of Appeals to decide. Yeah. Also, would like this case affects more than just restitution awards. This could conceivably affect child support cases. Let's say someone got a child support order that they didn't like. For whatever reason, the person who was collecting it decided that didn't immediately try to collect upon it. Under the state's argument, a child support order isn't appealable until someone tries to enforce it, goes to court and tries to enforce it. This court would never hold something like that. And I see the befuddlement in some of your eyes. That's because it just doesn't make sense. It's an unworkable situation, and it defies the general rule of how we litigate cases in the state. You litigate everything at once at the first opportunity. If you don't, it's barred by res judicata. And it also could affect civil judgments under the state's theory. A successful plaintiff, for whatever reason, decided they didn't want to collect immediately on a judgment, on a civil judgment where they just won money, would prevent the defendant from appealing, because under the state's theory, the defendant isn't prejudiced by having a judgment against him when no one's made any effort to collect it. Now that's, again, it's a ridiculous hypothetical, but that's the result of what the Fifth District did, which is why I believe the Fifth District judges a couple of the Fifth District judges have changed their mind now after Dannison has come out. At least two of the Fifth District judges have changed their mind. As far as the procedural position of this case, there are still two judges in the Fifth District who have issued decisions saying restitution is not a final appealable order, and those are Judges Boggins and Gwynn are still on record as holding that you can't appeal a restitution order until collection, so that the issue is still worthy of this court's decision. Well, if there are no further questions, Your Honor, I request to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Hardwick. Ms. Maroney.
Ms. Maroney, if in this case you had only gotten a $500 restitution award instead of the $22,000, does the state have a right to appeal that right away?
Under what we've been arguing, it would not. No, the state would not.
So you would have to start trying to collect it before you were able to appeal it?
That would be the issue, yes.
So let's say it sat there for 10 years, nobody tried to collect it. Then 10 years later, when somebody said, oh, here's an old judgment, we should collect it, at that point now the defendant can finally appeal it, or you can appeal it?
And I can understand that issue with the court, and that is a concern. And
What happens if he runs in and pays the $500 right away? Does that now foreclose you from appealing it because you never tried to collect it?
Obviously, then there wouldn't be an issue if they're just going ahead and paying.
Yeah, but you wanted $22,000. You didn't want $500, but he's gone in and paid the $500. It's done. It's over with. You can't appeal it now?
I understand what you're saying. I guess until that step, I mean, it would still be affecting. That would still be an act that would be affecting that defendant or that convicted felon, his act of paying something. And the state's position has been that under 2505.02, this just doesn't meet the definition of a final appealable order.
Does the rest of the order meet the definition of final appealable order? The judge here, trial judge, as you know, ordered the defendant to do several things. One is to pay $1,000 and to pay the attorney fees to the court clerk of courts and $20 a month to probation department. Are those final appealable orders?
Under the rationale of the Fifth District's decision in Dannison, they would not be, Your Honor or Chief Justice, until
the Fifth District has put you in a very difficult position, I have to tell you, because I don't understand their opinion, the two judges. Why someone has to, I mean, that if we held that in this case, it would mean that in every civil case where someone is ordered to do something, that's not a final appeal order until someone attempts to execute on that judgment. That's not the law, is it?
It is a difficult position, and it's
should we adopt it?
That's for you to decide, and I feel, I'm the lone holder of the torch, because since this court
doing
decided
the best you can.
To take this, they
very difficult
counsel is
decision.
Correct. They have basically reversed themselves and specifically decided not to go along with their opinion or their rationale in Dannison. But the concern of the state from the very beginning was what Justice O'Donnell mentioned in his questioning, which is when we have, it's a fundamental fairness, when you have a convicted felon or a defendant and you have an innocent victim, who should benefit from this? And it seems
but
as...
That's not the issue of final appealable order, is it?
In this case, we have a defendant that's attempting to hide behind an affidavit of indigency. That is something that has, at the very beginning of the criminal procedure, he goes and requests for the purposes of trial counsel, and this is something that has been used throughout the whole proceeding.
But the issue presented to us in the briefs and by the Court of Appeals is whether an order of a trial court, to order an order that orders someone to pay restitution is a final appealable order, whether it can be appealed. That has nothing to do with the facts about the situation of the defendant, the person ordered to pay, does it? It's a legal question.
That's correct, Your Honor, and that was an ancillary issue in this
case.
Okay,
just so we understand what the issue is.
And the state's position, as argued in my brief, it would be that 2505.02, and specifically the D subsection, it states, that basically that statute overrides all prior statutes. And appellant is attempting to argue 2505.03 as to final judgments is what he's pointing to. And by the very nature of the plain language of 2505.02, it basically is a trump card. It trumps what the appellant is trying to argue in this case. The concern is there is a clear distinction, and this court even recently has decided it, that there's a distinction between the ordering, which a trial judge must do at the time of sentencing. He must set that restitution order versus an actual collection of the cost. So that's a distinction. And the state would argue that what affects a final, what makes it a final appealable order is the actual enforcement of that. But you're correct, Your Honor. It is a difficult position that the state's been put in. But if there are no further questions, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Maroney. You did well. Mr. Hardwick, you saved almost 6 minutes of your time.
Your Honor, unless there are lots of questions, I don't think I'll be using all that time. Just briefly, under 250502, B4B clearly makes a distinction between what a final order is and a final judgment. And again, I apologize for throwing this red herring into the case, because it defines a final order as an order in which the appealing party would not be afforded meaningful review on appeal after following a final judgment. Now, that clearly means there's a difference between a final order and a final judgment. A final order is a provisional final judgment, is the end of the case when everything is done except collection. And well, I do appreciate the difficult position the Court of Appeals placed my opposing counsel. If there are no further questions, I'll just ask this court to reverse and send this case back to the Court of Appeals.
Thank you, Mr. Hardwick. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.